Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Claude Allen. Claude is the Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And joining us in our conversation is Therese Morin.
Claude, you mentioned earlier about some programs that go across agencies, and of course one of the major ones right now is bioterrorism. Can you talk to us a bit about what HHS is doing in that area?
Certainly can. Having been in the department on 9/11 of 2001, it was a wake-up call to all of us, and this is one of the areas that HHS has a primary responsibility in response to any bioterrorism event, not only bioterrorism but also all hazards, because we have the health components of what would be part of that response, the doctors, the hospitals. We coordinate with the Centers for Disease Control, the Food and Drug Administration, and even the research aspect of it through the National Institutes of Health. So we have a lot of the assets that would be called upon. Well, very recently, President Bush and Secretary Thompson announced a major project the department's undertaking called Project BioShield. Project BioShield is a comprehensive effort to develop and make available modern, effective drugs and vaccines to protect American citizens against attack by biological or chemical weapons or other dangerous materials or pathogens. This project is cuts across the department. It involves the National Institutes of Health in investing resources into research of new and innovative ways of developing vaccines, for example. For many of the agents that we hear a lot about today, a new smallpox vaccine, we need to accelerate that. We have an existing vaccine that works effectively, but we need to get a next generation vaccine. Anthrax, we experienced that in 2001 as well. And those are the sort of other pathogens, whether it be Ebola or tularemia or plague, you know, 14th century disease. These are the sort of things that we don't have right now effective responses for. And so Project BioShield focuses our activities to develop that and push science, the research, and then the Food and Drug Administration, for example, in terms of approving those products in a timely manner so that they can be put into the marketplace and be effective as tools in our arsenal against bioterrorism.
On the Medicare and Medicaid side, what is HHS doing to modernize and strengthen Medicare and Medicaid?
Two very important issues, again, for the department. The president's proposal to reform Medicare would give seniors choices in what we're looking at. We want to ensure that seniors have access to very needed pharmaceuticals and drugs that they need so they don't have to either go without food or shelter or engage in very dangerous practices and ordering things over line that may not have been approved for safety or efficacy. We're providing options for seniors. We have three programs under Medicaid that we're talking about in our reform package, namely traditional Medicare. Many seniors like their doctors, like their plans, and they want to say that they just want to have access to drugs. Well, under the traditional proposal, we would allow them to continue what they have, stay where they are, and give them a discount for drugs between 10 to 25%. And for very low-income individuals, we would even give them $600 a year to purchase pharmaceuticals. We also would help to cover what oftentimes are considered catastrophic care costs. These are very large out-of-pocket expenses if you had to go into the hospital. Under the existing system, if you had to do that, you have to put a lot of money out of pocket, which many, many those who benefit from Medicare, the elderly, the disabled, oftentimes aren't able to do that. So that's one proposal. The second aspect of it is what we call enhanced Medicare. Enhanced Medicare is for those who are willing to accept some management of their care and coordinate it, and these individuals would have the enhanced benefit of getting preventive care. Right now, Medicare treats you when you're ill, when you're sick. We think we need to move the focus from treatment and care to prevention, and our Medicare system needs to reflect that. And so under the enhanced system, we would enhance Medicare. We would have that prevention available as well, as we would also have under what we call Medicare Advantage. This is where we would have programs throughout each region that would allow for individuals who are willing to go into managed care to be able to access increased benefits and even have subsidized prescription drugs. So these are some of the advantages that we look to in terms of Medicare reform. On the Medicaid side, this is another major area that we spend a lot of time and attention on, and that is often, it serves often women and children. And here, we believe that we need to be working with the states to give, once again, states flexibility to deal with populations that that oftentimes, either because it's mostly absorbed in what we call mandatory populations, those are the populations that Congress has mandated that we need to cover, and therefore it leaves out others, the disabled sometimes, unless they're in a nursing home, for example. And this is where we see states at a very difficult time making very difficult choices of cutting people off of programs. Well, we believe that by giving states more flexibility and looking at across the board how they want to serve populations with benefit packages that are tailored to that state's needs and the people in that state's needs, that we can maximize not only the access to care and the coverage of individuals, but we could also maximize the use of tax dollars. So these are areas that we believe are very important in terms of both Medicare and Medicaid reform.
One can't help but notice that a lot of HHH spending is mandatory spending as opposed to discretionary spending. So I'm curious, how does this affect the management of the department?
It has a very large impact on the department. For example, discretionary programs comprise only about 11% of the department's budget, or about $65 billion out of, again, that large budget of $453 billion for 2004. So as you can see, we have much of our budget is tied up in what we call mandatory spending that we're required to spend it on. And whether the source of the funding is mandatory or whether it's discretionary, however, doesn't change our mission. Our mission is to deliver health services and human services and ensure the customers and the taxpayers get the best benefit from either of those. The president has made a commitment to not only providing the very best health care in the world, but also to provide it in a way that is fiscally responsible. And so that's what we're really tasked with, working with Congress to come up with those sort of solutions.
One of the main areas in the president's management agenda is to integrate performance and budgeting. What is the department doing in this area?
I spent a lot of time with working within the department in terms of integrating performance and budgeting. And in fact, we believe that is an excellent way for the department to run. We look at, for example, Medicare. HHS, through the Medicare program, is the largest insurer in the country. And as such, we need to have, what are our outcome measures? How are we tackling the issue of managing that large agency and that large task with ensuring that we have performance and outcome measurements? And so some of the things we're committed to doing is refining the links between performance and budgeting. We are working very aggressively to have performance measures for all of our agencies in terms of what we're expecting of them to produce in a very, very massive documents that come out. But we go down to the program level and ask, okay, how are you going to tie your budgeting, which your request is, to the outcomes that you hope to achieve in terms of performance? We've even gone so far as now that the managers of these agencies, senior managers, will have performance contracts that, again, reflects on the outcomes that they're hoping to achieve, such that when we ask for the dollars, we say we want the taxpayers to give us and allow us to use money for an important program, which they're very important, many of them, then we should be able to say this is what you will get for your return on your investment. We need to treat the taxpayers as someone who was entrusted with their money. They want to see a return on that investment. And performance and budget integration is one way to accomplish that. And so it's an exciting process. It's wonderful that we have a president, the first president who has an MBA, and he wants to see government run like a business. And I know that your listeners very much understand that at the end of the day, the stakeholders want to know, how have you used my investment and what is my return going to be? That's how we need to be running government, and that's what my job is, to oversee that process for HHS.
Earlier you described that there are something like 300 programs, and a lot of them are executed by non-HHS employees, contractors and the like, spending or handling funds. How do you ensure the accountability of these funds handled by these folks?
Well, of course, again, Medicare and Medicaid are the largest programs that we have that would, for example, utilize third-party financial arrangements and through a lot of contractors and intermediaries. And as such, we have the HHS, or the Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General. The Inspector General's office is tasked with overseeing and monitoring both Medicare and Medicaid in terms of ensuring accountability and fiscal responsibility, and also ensuring that they're minimizing and prosecuting fraud and abuse. They also work very closely with the department to root out waste. That's a big part that the Office of the Inspector General works with us in as well. Outside of Medicare and Medicaid, we also, through the agencies, we have non-entities that, if a non-entity that is a federal partner, in a sense, let's say it's a grantee or a contractee, spends more than $300,000 or more annually in federal grant awards, then we require them to have organization-wide or program-specific accountability measures in place. And those are reviewed very carefully at the very senior levels of the department, but also they're done at the agency level to be ensured as well. We're also in the process of planning for and establishing erroneous payments for many of our programs that are state-run programs, such as the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program or any program that where we make payments. We're establishing, in conjunction with the Office of Management and Budget, an erroneous payment rate. And these are tools that we can use to look at and drill down through the programs to find out where do we need to strengthen our management systems. At the state level, again, having come from a state where I oversaw many of these programs, we had to do that at the state level because the state tax dollars were running out the door and we weren't seeing impact, and many of it was because of errors. So error rates are one way for us to look at how can we improve not only the programs themselves, but how can we improve our systems so that we can understand where the dollars are going and stop the erroneous payments so those who truly need the assistance can get it.
That's a good stopping point. We've got to go to a break. Come back in a few minutes as we continue our conversation with Claude Allen of HHS. How is HHS doing with the other items called out in the President's Management Agenda? We'll ask Claude when the Business of Government Hour returns.